Welcome back, everyone, to From Illumination to Innovation. We appreciate you coming back for more. I'm your co-host, Shaniqua Brown, the founder of Elevated TA, and today is our recap of our HR series, The Good, The Bad, and The Potential.
Oh my God. Thank you, Shaniqua. And I am your co-host, Stephanie Crane, and I'm the corporate mystic. And I am so excited to be recapping this series because, first of all, we just had such fantastic guests.
Oh my God.
That brought so many great insights. But before we dive into the series, I know both of us had some really great opportunities this week to give presentations. Okay. And Shaniqua, do you want to share with the audience what your opportunity was?
Oh, Stephanie, I'm so excited. As you know, this is my first presentation as a speaker. So I was very honored that Mindy Honkoop, one of our guests from episode 3 of the HR series, she recommended me to Jeff Walden, the chair of Social HR Camp for Austin, Texas. It was the first social HR camp event here in Texas. And my session was on humanizing AI in recruiting.
Wow.
I should possibly go back a bit here and tell you what the event was about. The event focused on building future-ready workplaces.
Oh, cool.
In the age of the AI revolution. So my topic on humanizing AI
totally on point.
And recruiting.
Oh my God.
On point. And there were other amazing, amazing sessions that I had a chance to sit in on. One of which that stood out to me was about outreach to candidates for recruitment using AI.
Oh, cool. Well, how does that work?
So have you heard of sentiment analysis? First, shout out to Hillary Wagner. She was the session presenter. So go to Social HR Camp Austin and you'll find Hillary Wagner. But there's sentiment analysis that you can do using AI, and they'll help you get an understanding of this candidate, and you can tailor your outreach to them. So it cuts back on hours of time.
That's amazing.
But what I spoke about was remembering that as we are utilizing AI, it's helping us with the administrative task of recruiting, which is so helpful. But we also need to be mindful of the person that is going through the process, right? Our prospective employees. If we are creating an impersonal interview experience, how are we expecting this person to join our living, breathing organization? Instead of just buying into an AI solution out of the box, how are we strategically approaching and ethically approaching AI in every stage of our hiring process? Is it necessary to have this at the onboarding if we are only onboarding 2 employees a year? Or is it better served at the applicant stage? Like, how are we using AI that best serves the person? So that was my session.
I bet that was really informative for your audience and gave them a lot to really explore and ponder with AI, because there's so much happening there too. And so that's some like great direction to let people like really get into the concept of that.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. But enough about me, Stephanie, because I want to hear about your presentation. I wasn't there. It was remote. It was across the pond.
It was my first international presentation. Oh my gosh. And it was virtual. Yes, because I'm here right now. But I was invited to present to the UK Ministry of Defense for their Employee Learning at Work Week. Uh-huh. And I thought it was a really awesome event that they were doing. It was for the entire Ministry of Defense. And so I don't know like who was in my audience, but when I asked, they told me, well, it could be anybody from civilians to generals. And I was like,
really?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes, it was amazing. And you know, I got the request through my Instagram feed, and which was also fantastic.
Stephanie, the corporate mystic, You have to check her out. I'm just so happy for you. So this is like your first gig through your Instagram?
It was.
Your social media?
Yes, it was. It came through that. The opportunity came that way. My presentation, it focuses on moving. It's called Reaction Point. Mm-hmm. And it's from moving from reaction to responsiveness. And it really talks about emotional intelligence. And it starts off talking about emotional intelligence with individuals mm-hmm. and how we sort of deal with our own triggers and emotional stresses. And then it moves it into organizational spaces mm-hmm. and what it looks like when you're trying to elevate or, you know, emotional intelligence within an organization or a culture, and how you can sort of tell when you have maybe low emotional intelligence in your culture, like what is happening, you know, and what's showing up for the environment when that's happening. And so it was a great presentation. The audience was super, oh my God, they were super engaged. They asked wonderful questions. And of course, I got a compliment on my hair, which always makes me happy.
Was it the hair lipstick combo, or was it specifically the hair?
Well, it was specifically the hair, but I did also get a compliment, you know, so my voice is so hoarse today, but I got a compliment on my voice too, and that made me happy.
You do have a beautiful voice. I can listen to you.
Thank you. So it was fantastic, but let's get to our recap, because we've got so much to talk about. And like always, we're going to run right up to the minute on this because it was such a fantastic. Mm-hmm. So where do you want to start? You want to start by just giving everybody an overview on what our shows were, what we were talking about?
For sure. So we were fortunate to have to create this five episode series of HR, the good, the bad, and the potential. And a lot of our topics or central themes are around, you know, what is the function of HR? It seems to be like a lot of people have a question about like, what does HR do?
I think we discovered even some people in HR are sometimes questioning that themselves.
Right. You were definitely able to bring that home. We discussed, is HR your friend?
I think I had something to do with that.
You were the inspiration behind this. And I believe that we left with the question, like, is anyone really your friend? And in the company, you know, we're paying you to be there. So that was something that I found insightful. And then you and I discussed, like, what is the employee experience? And that was a very fun episode. We had a theme day.
We did. We went with employee theme day. And definitely worth watching on YouTube if you are listening to the podcast. Yes.
After that, Mindy Honkoop. Hi, Mindy.
Hey.
We talked about how can HR be strategic in an organization. The seat at the table, I found that to be very insightful and moving. And then we wrapped up with Emma Garcia with, you know, is the future of HR human? And I think that we're all kind of questioning that with the advancement of technology, will I be relevant? And I find that to be a fascinating question, mm-hmm. considering that we are life and we've created AI. And I love your take on you have to say it, like, about like AI, that we've birthed AI. And
yeah, I believe that AI is a community child that we should all be raising, and mm-hmm. we should look at it that way. We all have accountability. If we are just ignoring AI out of fear, or we're leaving it to whoever mm-hmm. to program it, you know, if we're not participating actively, it's just like anything else. It takes a village to truly raise something. And AI is really an expression of humanity through technology. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's how we should perceive it. I don't, you know, one of the things I do, I'm always very polite to AI. I always say please and thank you. I don't even know if I do that to people sometimes, but I find like I want AI to be kind. I want it to be mindful. I want it to be thoughtful. So I speak to it the way that I model the behavior I wish to see.
That's brilliant. I saw a content creator's post. I can't recall who shared it with me, but they essentially said if AI doesn't do whatever platform you're using, doesn't complete the request in the way that you asked, you required, you should yell at AI and tell it that like its kid is going to get murdered or something. And
it's very upsetting.
That is upsetting. Why would you program it to think that?
This is no different than what I actually tell leaders in environments when they are trying to repair their culture, or is, again, model the behavior you wish to see. And I don't, you know, why would somebody do that? And my opinion would be because that's what they've been taught. That's what they've been taught. And that's why they would do that. But, you know, there's a lot that we can unlearn. And there's a lot more that we can learn for ourselves that I think will take us to a much better place in that regard. And, you know, so let's, you know, do we want to work backwards a little bit, or do we want to start from the beginning and go forward?
I'm actually curious about what was your, like, maybe your top three takeaways, and it could be from across all five episodes. Yeah. What were your takeaways?
Well, for sure, since we're on the topic, I'm just going to start with the most, the last episode, which was AI and is, you know, is the future of HR human. And just Emma's heartfelt take on humanity in the workplace and her belief in humanity, which just was meant so much to me and was so inspiring. That's a huge takeaway for me because I don't hear it enough. And, you know, I feel like when we disparage ourselves and when we disparage humans, we're disparaging ourselves. And, you know, we really need to work to uplift each other. And so that was really uplifting for me. One of my personal favorite takeaways was your history lesson on HR. Oh my gosh, I love the quiz. I love the information because it was so informative and interesting to think about HR sort of beyond what we know of current corporate business structure and really to go back into work in general and what that looked like, you know, throughout history. And so that was very fascinating for me. And of course, I really enjoyed the conversation with Lisa talking about whether or not HR is our friend. You know, I had a reel that I did on that got a lot of attention. You know, it stirred up a lot of conversations, which is one of the things that I think was really valuable with Lisa, is just being able to extend that conversation and talk about it openly and really explore the concept without sort of, you know, it's like as I open it up, I love HR people. I love all people. I don't, you know, really look at individuals from the titles and the positions that they work in, but to explore whether or not HR, you know, is a value service to an employee or working at, you know, I just think that that's important and really valuable to our audience. So, what about you?
All that you said were also great highlights. Now I'm thinking like three. Oh my gosh, we have so many.
I know, you asked me for three. You know, like, we've got like 25. Okay.
How much time do we have to record? I loved all of yours. To add to that, I would say that with Prudence, that episode where she highlighted her take on who the DEI leader should be, Prudence thought her take is that white men should be the leaders of DEI programs. And as I rewatched the video, I saw off the cuff, I said, well, maybe they would still have funding, you know? But
maybe they would.
And more seriously, I feel that it would be great to give them the responsibility of, it will force them to educate themselves on how to be inclusive, like actually creating strategies to not only hire from diverse communities, but then how do we make sure that these people and anyone that we hire into our organization actually belongs? You know, so I thought that was really profound. I didn't see it that way before. And I've been, myself and my other female colleagues and even women colleagues of color have been leading DEI efforts, and it feels like you're talking to a wall.
You know, I thought it was a brilliant statement. And to your point of accountability, it really does create an accountability where, you know, you feel like a leader could hire a woman of color and put her in charge of DEI and pat himself on the back and feel like he, you know, job well done, right? But how invested and connected is he into that program, or she, or anybody really, you know? But the idea that having a white man lead that and really understand it. And again, I brought it up. It reminds me of the movie Hidden Figures. Because it's sort of what happened in that particular environment. And it needed to happen for that environment to shift. Mm-hmm. It's just a, you know, a media example. But I think it does kind of illustrate what Prudence was really describing.
Mm-hmm. My second profound takeaway was from our episode when we highlighted that the employee experience mirrors your customer success or your customer experience. So it really wouldn't cost the company much to create an employee experience program. Mm-hmm. And it would actually benefit the company possibly tenfold if they just, let's take what we're doing already in sales and apply it into our recruitment and, you know, professional development, so we can ensure that we're keeping, we're retaining our employees, and then we're motivating them to take care of our customer. You know, if we're focusing on profit, if we're profit driven, then the employee experience will be a great way to ensure that you're profitable.
Absolutely. I think that's, I mean, it's so important. And, you know, leadership drives culture. Mm-hmm. Culture drives the brand and everything related to it. And that all expresses itself to the customer. So it's critical.
And the final one, it was with our strategy, our HR, like strategic partner. Because I think oftentimes, I mean, going back to earlier, I don't think that a lot of people understand what HR is. And you alluded several times that even HR is confused by what HR is doing, what it is. Mm-hmm. And I believe business leaders are making decisions about the people of the organization, HR has to have a seat at the table.
Absolutely.
HR is well-versed in compliance, the like federal regulations as it relates to employment. So it would be beneficial for these organizations to listen to HR professionals. So bringing them in as strategic partners, not just HR business partners where they're doing your admin work and just making sure you get your perf in on time, but they're actually there to say, hey, I can see your vision of your organizational plan, but this is how we'll need to develop your team to achieve these goals, not just hire externally. We can do that,
absolutely,
but that costs a lot of money. I'm your strategic partner, you know? Let's have these conversations. Why are you unable to develop your team to reach these goals? Because we hired you and are paying you $300,000, you know, a year. Why can't you? What's the gap that we're having to develop this team? Or, you know, should we bring in a middle line manager to, you know, offset? So I think having a strategic partner will be super helpful. So those are my top three.
I think those are all, I mean, again, our guests brought so much insight. I learned so much personally, mm-hmm, just for myself. Our guests brought so much insight to this overall conversation of looking at human resources or wish.
Hashtag wish.
Hashtag wish. Oh
my brother's going to be so embarrassed.
You'll have to watch episode 5 if you want to understand what wish is.
Okay. Oh my God.
But yeah, I think it's, I think it's something that it's long overdue to be having these very open conversations about this and really finding a way to shape HR into the future, shaping it towards where it needs to go. Because, you know, as you've, one of the things that kind of surprised me a little bit about your history lesson, mm-hmm, on HR was when you were describing the ages, and I'm not going to remember them all. I know that we kept thinking, I know you're going to remember them. You're going to correct me and tell me the ages. Say them in order.
We have the pre-industrial.
Okay.
We have the paternalist.
Yes.
Bureaucratic. high performance.
And we are currently in the high performance age, uh-huh. right. And if I remember correctly, you said that started around the 90s?
70s.
Okay, so even further back, which means I feel like we're coming up to an age change.
We are.
I feel like we're on the verge of a shift with HR because we've been in this high performance age for quite a period of time now, almost 50 years, 60, uh-huh. I can't do math, 50, 55 years, right? And so I really do think, you know, and of course, you know, it seemed like each age kind of shortened itself as it
I was just going to say that.
And so that just kind of works with the cycle.
And I would say, like, to add to that, like, along with, like, people becoming, gaining freedoms, we start to see the ages shrink, right? Because now more yes. people have the opportunity to be innovative. And what happens when you innovate is change. There's evolution.
Change happens faster.
You know? So I agree 100% with you on that.
Yeah. So I think we're on the brink of a big shift. Mm-hmm. And I think that shift is going to really require businesses to rethink their entire approach to what human resources has been mm-hmm. historically. So, you know, I'm not predictive in that sense, but I do believe Gen Z is going to have a huge influence on this shift and how it happens. I think that's when Gen Z is really fully coming into that leadership space of the workforce is when we're really going to start to see those transitions truly come to fruition. But they're already happening and Gen Z is already pushing those boundaries. Like, one of the things that I was thinking about when we were talking about leadership at the table, and I immediately thought about, like, I wonder what HR, you know, how what organizations have addressed when it comes with COVID and work from home and then the go back to work, return to work and all of this stuff. And, you know, HR having a leadership role in that conversation seems so critical mm-hmm. to understand, like, how do you maintain the culture of your organization? How do you build flexibility into your workforce? Mm-hmm. How do you, you know, how are you utilizing these things as opportunities mm-hmm. instead of, you know, like forcing your employees to come back to work if they don't want to, or creating situations that are just really not taking advantage of opportunity, you know?
Right.
We're like, let's just fall back to what we knew. And so, yeah, that's just a curiosity question. We didn't really talk about it in any of the conversations very specifically, mm-hmm. but when I think about leadership at the table, I hear so much about flexibility and work from home and
right.
return to work.
It's almost like you're asking them, HR professionals, to obviously do the surveys, but then ask more instead of just doing the quantitative surveys and do qualitative surveys after you receive the data, asking, well, why? Because when you start asking why, you get curious about the data that you're receiving. When you're going back to the executives and having conversations, you have more. You can provide the full picture and provide them with more guidance. Because if we push on them returning to office, we will lose X percent because of our workforce, because they prioritize flexibility. They really...
Well, and to Emma's point, the gig economy is becoming a huge thing, right?
I'm here for this.
I am here for it too. Absolutely. And it's super individually empowering. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are going to take more and more of that opportunity for themselves as it, you know, resources become more available and it becomes easier and more flexible for people to do that. So it's going to be harder for organizations to not address that need, you know, and some people like to go to the office. I don't think it's like a black or white issue in the sense of it's got to be this way or that. I just think that there are some organizations that look at it that way. And the ones that do are going to struggle a lot more.
But I find that to be interesting because many businesses, I can't remember the number, but you and I have researched this in our earlier episodes when we discussed core values. I think it's like between 75 to like 90% innovation in their core values. But if you can't be innovative after, you know, like whether or not your employees come into the office, and are you really?
Remember in that the same is, so 90% of organizations list innovation as a core value, but when asked, it was like 75% or higher of managers that said, no, they don't want to hire innovative people because they ask too many questions, they want to make too many changes, they want to do things different, and they really want people to just put their heads down and work.
Right.
And the problem I have with that is the misalignment of values. Mm-hmm. If you don't want innovation in your organization, that is perfectly fine. Don't state it as a core value, because you're basically lying to your prospective employees, because you're going to hire innovative people and they're going to quickly get dissatisfied and they're going to move on because they're not allowed to live to their fullest potential.
And lying costs you money.
It does.
Trillions of dollars when you have to.
Absolutely.
And voluntary, you mentioned voluntary departure.
Yes. And that's, I'm pretty sure that's a Gallup workforce study. And it showed that that the vast majority of those turnovers were avoidable. And I think that's the key thing, is that this doesn't have to be happening. We don't have to have this level of disruption.
I would, as someone who, I'm going to say like most, 90% of hire, like attrition could be avoidable. But we live in a capitalistic society. We're all adults. We know we have to work.
Yes.
So if I have a job, I understand that I need this job to live my life.
Absolutely.
And if I'm leaving, this is terrible. Yeah. There's something here that's not meshing with me. And I feel, often than not, it's like misalignment in the values, like what I was sold during the process and the reality. Now that the series is over, do you feel like you have a more a profound understanding of HR, what it does?
Honestly, more than just profound, because it definitely expanded not just my understanding, but the potential. And that's why we called the series that, because we know that there's so much opportunity for what can happen just within. And this is just a department.
Right.
In an organization. So it's like we could probably have a similar series on different areas of companies and talk about this. But when we talk about HR and their impact, and also so much confusion around, most people, like you said, and I think one of our episodes, most people really aren't confused about what accounting is doing, and everybody knows marketing is making things look pretty. So we're all good there. sorry, marketing people, we know we do awesome work. Okay. but in reality, just that opening up the potential for what we could do with HR and how business could just really thrive so much more if they would recognize the value in that space alone. And just really opening their minds up. Being, not, as Emma said, not being afraid of change, recognizing that change is literally like it is this core and central to what we're experiencing right now. And we're changing faster than we can keep up with it. Mm-hmm. And we have to be able to mitigate that as humans. We have to be able to mitigate that as companies too.
Right.
What about you? What was your sort of how did it expand your thoughts around HR? What did you take away that was?
I feel that my takeaway was more around the appreciation I had for each guest and their perspective. Because I think with my working in HR, I've gained calluses on certain particular topics. I think with Emma, I shared a story about my experience working with my HRBP when I needed them, and how I felt let down. But speaking to these professionals, I felt like reinvigorated that there's four or five professionals out there that are making waves in the HR community. They're thought leaders in this space, and they are driven to make this, make the companies better. How can they're on the same side as the employees.
Yes.
So that was really nice, because it's easy to get in a wormhole after you've been laid off and you are, feeling like the HR is against you. Mm-hmm. But then to have them come on, and every single one of them highlighted the importance of the employee.
Absolutely.
They highlighted the work and the value that each employee adds to the organization. And that was something that I hope that our audience takes away. There are HR professionals across different industries, different roles, and they've all had different backgrounds to get to where they are today in their HR leadership positions. But every single one of them saw the value of the employee.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really, really tender.
That was very inspiring. Mm-hmm. It was. And it's something that, I'll say it for me, it's something I need to hear as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I hear from so many people about their own personal experiences. And, you know, sometimes it's difficult. I mean, I really feel for the people that reach out to me and share. And it's like, I just want to hug everybody. I just want to be like, but the interesting thing is I'm hearing this, you know, from employees and from HR people,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's really been a struggle on both sides. And I think everybody is sort of ready for the shift. Mm-hmm. You know, I think HR wants to be valued for the great work that they do, and they want to be recognized for it. And employees want that too.
Right.
You know?
Yes, of course.
They want that too.
You are working. As a millennial, I received plenty of real trophies.
she did.
Me but too. It is important to get recognition.
Absolutely.
You know? And if I'm hearing on the earnings call, I have a story about recognition. I like built this in my own personal recognition. And I think this was possibly the reason why I ended up leaving my role, because I didn't feel like I was getting the recognition I felt I deserved.
Yeah.
But anyways, I would log into our earnings call and I would hear, you know, we're increasing our profitability because this department has really sold a lot. And I'm thinking, oh, I hired 35 people to that department.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I indirectly impacted that profit.
I would say you directly impacted.
Directly.
Directly. I mean, like, what is indirect? One of the things that we talk about the employee experience and the customer experience. One of the things that I deeply believe is every employee in an organization needs to know their direct impact on the company, the customer, mm-hmm. and the profit.
Yes.
Period. Their direct impact. Not their tertiary impact, not their secondary impact, not their whatever. Their direct impact.
Direct impact.
Because every employee has direct impact on that experience.
Right. That is so true. That is true. I appreciate that. It was a direct impact because if I didn't hire those people in X amount of time so they can ramp up to then
absolutely.
Accomplish the sales goals, then we would not have
and,
made
and
our
making
target.
Thoughtful, mindful hires, like really doing the work to match individual to culture to,
yes.
you know, roles to, I mean, all of that is intentional and purposeful and is absolutely core and central to them being able to reach their profit goals.
So true.
Yeah.
What would be, we're coming to an end on time.
Yeah.
What is something that you want to leave with the audience or maybe even like ask a question, but like what is something that you want the audience to take away from this series?
For me, the biggest thing that I want the audience to understand is that there is real potential. People seem to just be worn out by this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I understand. I talk to a lot of people that just feel sort of dispirited. And I want to inspire people and uplift their perspective on this. And to recognize that, like, HR needs a seat at the table. Employees need a seat at the table.
Yes.
Like, we all need to recognize how we are working together to, you know, towards commonality here. And so, I mean, my goal is, you know, a little altruistic, but I just want people to feel better about the work they're doing, really. Not, you know, not even about HR. That would be great
right.
for people to, you know, feel better. But I think that there's a lot of work that organizations need to do for that to truly happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want people to feel more valued and appreciated in their role and feel like that they do have resources and support available to them. And so, yeah, I don't know if we did that, but I feel like that's sort of the heart of what we're trying to accomplish in this conversation.
Oh, I think that's brilliant, Stephanie. I love that.
Thank you. What about you?
My takeaway from this series is that your company is a team, not a family. Also, if you're company says they're a family, that's a red flag.
They're dysfunctional.
and I say that, and I think you and I are aligned with this, because in my mind, a team is driven by the mission. You played sports. I played sports. Mm-hmm. We're rah-rah, let's go get them. Yeah. You know, we're on it. Everyone that's there to watch you play, they're all driven by that mission.
Absolutely. Mission. So the Olympics are coming up, so we see.
Summer Olympics are my favorite, so I'm really excited.
Mine too. Simone Biles, I am so excited.
We should watch together. Let's do that.
Okay. All right.
And for me, family is driven by this idea of unconditional love, so you can work through a lot. And some families can be dysfunctional, some families can be great, but
it's a lovely ideal.
Uh-huh.
But it's not really real. I mean, the only time your company is a family is when it's a family business.
Yes.
And that's,
and you're sharing money. It's not that they're like, it is yours.
Yes.
Right? The company is yours.
Yours.
If you got fired, it would be a big deal. And then a company where it's not a family business, you getting fired is a regular Wednesday.
Well, yeah, or you know, a quiet Friday afternoon where mm-hmm. you just disappear.
Yeah.
So
no, everyone, they'll tell you it's just business.
It's just business.
Right. And if it's just business, like the many teams that I've been a part of, is not family. I've changed jerseys, cheer uniform. And no one has said, you're leaving our family. No, I'm changing a team.
Yeah.
You know, so I would leave with that. Work is a team. Your family is your family.
I think that is exponentially brilliant. Absolutely.
So should we tease them about what's coming up next?
I think we should.
Okay, eat it.
Okay, so we are going to be exploring the generations in our upcoming episodes, and we may be playing a little Generation Jeopardy.
Ooh, generation. generations in the workplace. Oh, here we go. What is Gen Z like in a workplace?
What about the millennial?
Manager?
What about the millennial boomer situation? I feel like there's some tension there. Am I wrong on that?
Because millennials are becoming managers now, and boomers are still at work.
You know, one thing though I think is important is that our goal is to elevate all generations.
I am here to do that. From my perspective as someone who wants to retire at 45, I'm like, let people retire at 65, okay? I am here in support of that. Live your life, honey.
So, and I just want to say, from my perspective as someone who literally wants to work until I die because I love what I do.
Okay, so
I love what I do.
We have to talk more about this. So stay tuned for more. We're going to get into it. And thank you so much for joining us for our HR series.
Oh, it was awesome. Thank you.
Bye, y'all. Howdy, y'all.
Thanks for listening to our show. Show us your support by following us on your favorite podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
You can also find us on Castus at FromElimination2Innovation.castus.com. If you love our show, share it with your friends and coworkers too. Let's all work together to help businesses vibrate higher.